This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. My co-host Anthony Brooks is out today, but if he were here, right now I'd be asking him to tell you about how he comes from an old New England family. The Brooks go way back in this region. I, however, come from newer American stock. My parents first immigrated to Boston from India back in the 1970s. But both of us, like countless others, have learned a great deal about our genealogies through family stories, documents, and records that have survived generations. Well, in the past few years, genealogy, like so many other fields, has undergone a bit of a tech boom. There are television shows, online databases, and DNA tests which have transformed the once quaint pastime of searching through dusty old documents. That's one of the reasons why a recent article on The Verge, an online tech, science, and culture site, really caught our eye. In that article, writer Laura June claims that data and DNA will eventually make the question, "Where did I come from?" instantly solvable. Or as June writes, "The eternal search for our ancestors is coming to an end." It's an interesting, thought-provoking claim, especially to New England ears, as we live in a part of the country that not only has some of the best historical record-keeping anywhere, but it's also the home to the oldest and largest genealogical society in the nation. So, we now turn to New England Historic Genealogical Society's chief genealogist, David Lambert, who's joining us now for his perspective. David Lambert, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
So this was a really interesting article in The Verge. And again, it makes this claim that genealogy as we know it is coming to an end because it will soon be, you know, a cheek swab away to find out where did I come from. Do you buy that claim?
Well, on two angles, yes. On your Y DNA and on your mitochondrial DNA, yes, you can find out who the ancient ancestor is, but you get the names associated with them, which is not really the case. Because you can find out that you have a common ancestor. Maybe your ancestor goes back to Genghis Khan, as one person reported years ago when this DNA was first coming out. But it's not that he may be related to Genghis Khan, but shared the ancient ancestor of Genghis Khan. Hmm. So you don't get the name of your immigrant. You don't get the names and dates that are carved into a gravestone that's faded away. You just get an avenue.
An avenue. Okay. So I'm going to return to this in just a second, but I do want to say that, listeners, we want to hear from you because so many people are so deeply interested in their family's history. So are you one of them? Have you turned to the New England Historic Genealogical Society? Have you turned to online resources? Have you done that DNA cheek swab to find out where you're from? And what has the pursuit of discovering the deep roots of your family tree been like? Has it changed in the past several years? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. In a minute, I'm going to bring in another guest from right around our neck of the woods who's done a lot of personal genealogy. But David Lambert, I wanted to ask you first. So it gives you an avenue, as you said, but that's not fully what the pursuit of genealogy is.
Exactly. What the DNA does, for me, it actually opened up the Pandora's box. For me, records did not help find my Lambert ancestors. I've worked now for 20 years with the New England Historic Genealogical Society in Boston, have pored over countless rolls of microfilm, which gave me clues. But it was the DNA that helped solve my Y DNA, direct father's 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 connection back to a Lambert who came from Ireland. But if I wanted to search my dad's mother's father's DNA, I need to have a living male descendant from him. My father didn't pass on the Y DNA because his mother didn't get it, so therefore it didn't come out to me. So you still have to do the research to find that complex network to know all your ancestors in between. Mm. So your mother's mtDNA, your father's Y DNA, it's everything in between. You still have to do the old-fashioned way.
So what's also interesting to me is the DNA sort of gives you a biological tracing of that family line, but the context around them, the lives that they themselves led and how those stories influence where we end up today, can the DNA in and of itself provide any of that?
Well, and that's what NEHCS has been forward in doing, is that we are the collector of the New England's past and actually the National Resource for America, gathering these type of stories with letters, account books, and diaries, things that are not digitized. Until OCR capability of handwriting is available, there's so much that still needs to be searched the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, so it sounds like you don't necessarily feel threatened at all in terms by the online sites, by the advent of DNA genealogy, anything like that.
No, NEHGS and my staff have basically been able to triage the questions. You can go to an online site and put in a name and a date, but we can can interpret a question. So you can come with your, quote, brick wall ancestral problem, and we can give you resources or give you an avenue to produce it, whereas a database really can't do that.
Okay. Well, David, hold on for just a second, because I want to bring in WBUR's reporter, Steve Brown. Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
You're doing well.
And we have you here today because you were one of the more passionate family genealogists that we know here in the building. What got you interested in, how often do you
I am online several times a week.
Online where?
Ancestry.com. I also go to a lot of the archives of New Brunswick. They have a lot of birth certificates, death certificates, marriage certificates, all online. So I'll go and augment what I have on Ancestry.com to verify what I've discovered.
Okay, so Ancestry.com is one of the largest genealogical online databases out there. Just walk us briefly through when you log in. What do you see? What are you looking for? What does it help you find?
Well, when I log in, I will go to my family tree, and I've got about 3,600 people in that tree. That's my family, my wife's family. It's a lot. People that marry in and everything. And occasionally you get these notifications that we've got a clue for you. So I go and look at the clue, and I have a high threshold in terms of, is that clue right?
Uh-huh.
I kind of approach my genealogy the way I approach my reporting. You know, you get a tip. Hey, Meghna, did you know that? And you go, oh, well, we don't go right onto the radio and say, hey, you know, did you know that the governor, blah, 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 blah. No, we go and we check our sources. We verify things. And then once we verified it, then we can report it. And so that's what I do with this.
Go ahead.
So on Ancestry.com, it'll say, hey, here's a clue. Now, that clue might be a primary source. It might be a military record of a great uncle or something like that, their draft card or something like that. You see that, that's a primary record. You go, yeah, that, you know, he wrote down when his date of birth was. That must be his date of birth. You can, then you input that into, you might have known that he was born in the 1880s, but you're not sure exactly where. Once you see that primary record, then you can take that information and plug it in.
Okay, so that's really interesting. David Lambert, I mean, have you found that sites like Ancestry.com are trustworthy and authoritative in terms of, you know, as Steve was saying, primary sources?
When you offer a primary source and you're looking at the digital image of it, of course, you don't have to question it much. What the problem with a lot of these online sites is, are the genealogical charts where people key in their information based on their own knowledge. Dates could be wrong, places could be wrong, and that's fine. But once you make that public, you're compounding possible other thousands of people to see incorrect information and to link on, if you will, to this incorrect ancestry. Time and time again at NEHGS, people will bring in the printouts that they get from these online sites. And then what we do is, like Steve said, verify the information. They are looking for the primary sources because a lot of it does not have a citation or a link to an original document.
Well, Steve and David, stand by for a second because we've got several callers who want to offer their stories. We're talking about a new era of genealogy that comes with online databases, DNA swabs, and technological tools that weren't once at the fingertips of professional genealogists. And whether or not that's truly changing how we search out our family's stories. Susan is calling from Weston. You're on the air, Susan.
Hi. Yes, I'm wondering, I've always wondered, you know, how accurate a genealogical search can be. For example, if a mother has a child with someone who isn't her husband.
Oh, interesting question. Okay, so David, what's your thought on that?
Well, paternity tests and genealogy happen all the time. I think there have been many people that have thought they were a Bradford and Alden, and to find out they were an O'Sullivan or a McCormick because there's some paternity event that occurred in their genealogy, and that could be within a few generations or many generations. So it's very hard sometimes just by the paper record to know unless you find a legal document that states that the child was born out of wedlock or the father is unknown. So it does cause a little problem.
Steve, you're our first person resource on this story in terms of having gone through your own searches here. Did the online databases or other tools at any time lead you to a discovery about your family that you're not sure you would have made otherwise?
Yes, I think in terms of what's offered out there, you may be looking for some maiden names are very hard to find. Sometimes you'll find a relative and you know that, you know, by their married name, but you still want to keep going back, if you don't know their maiden name. So online, you might find through somebody else's tree a clue. Now, again, going back, if it's not a primary source, I want to verify that and maybe go to some marriage records and what have you from there. But there are things like that are out there that you can find.
Hmm. David Lambert, I'm thinking about how Steve is a person who's been passionate about this for a long time.
Sure.
And, you know, he's not going to rest at just typing in a URL and seeing what's out there. He's going to go to the ends and find original sources when he needs to. But for other people who may be sort of more casual genealogists, do you think that the availability of the electronic databases has maybe made them a little lazier than you might have otherwise seen in the past?
I like to think that it's brought more people into the field of genealogy. And what we at NEHGS would like to do is to educate them a little further to say, okay, now you have the foundations of what your genealogy is electronically. Let's back it up with your oral traditions that you have in your family, with original documents, things that we provide. And we have over 28 million original manuscripts at NEHGS. We've been collecting since 1845, 250,000 books. So we can back that up with things that haven't even been digitized yet. One of the more popular databases that we have that people search is we teamed up to put the Massachusetts Vital Records from 1841 to 1915 online. 25 years ago, when I worked at the State Archives, you could only search on a death by the last name at that time. We have it now cross-referenced that you can also search on the maiden name of the lady, not knowing her married name.
Oh,
so, like Steve said, maiden names are a definite linchpin. We now have that technology, which we wouldn't have had 20 years ago to do.
Let's go to Gloucester, where Alexander's calling. You're on the air, Alexander.
Thank you, Magna. I recently had a meeting with an aunt who I hadn't seen in 25 years, and just in a one-hour conversation with her, I gained more information about my grandparents on my mother's side than ever that I had before. And I'm thinking that, what does your guest feel about just living people as a resource for this information? I mean, you really have to start writing things down and picking brains, because oftentimes you won't find it even in a library.
Thank you so much for that call, Alexander. David?
One of the things that I like to look at when I see a gravestone is not just the names and the dates. It's the dash in between. That's the life of the person. So when my daughters ask about my parents, which are both deceased, I tell them the family stories. So when my daughters were young, we gave them ancestor stories besides bedtime stories. And that's really the root of genealogy. It's oral tradition. It's getting the stories and backing them up. So one of the problems that we have with this is that sometimes a family story can be a little elaborated. The ancestor marched on Lexington and Concord. Well, as I say, as a military historian, if as many people marched on Lexington and Concord as they did that arrived, there would be no British Army to retreat back to Boston.
That became an issue in the Senate campaign last year with ancestry for Elizabeth Warren. What was her, you know? And again, it's a family lore. So, you know, to the caller, that's great that you've talked to your aunt. Now verify everything she said.
Exactly.
Go and look at the records. And make sure that Aunt Susie wasn't selling you a bit of goods.
Right. And so the DNA, can the DNA help on that front then?
Well, I mean, the DNA, again, is limited to the point that it can tell you maybe your ethnic origins, deep ancestry. Your oral tradition isn't going to go back 30,000 years,
right,
as a rule.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that my ancestors lived 30,000 years ago in Bosnia. By the paper record, I can tell you that they arrived from Ireland to Nova Scotia in the 1790s. Getting the leapfrog between those thousands of years is what I probably will be working on for the rest of my life, which I love that journey.
You know, Steve and David, there's so much interest, and it seems to be ever exploding in terms of people looking for those original stories about their families. For you, Steve, what's one of the things, you know, with the addition of the resources through those online databases, et cetera, that's been most rewarding in this years-long search now?
Sure. One of the things right now that I'm doing, because you go back. Every time you find a relative, you've got two more relatives to find. So you're never, ever done. The trail does come run cold because records cease to exist at a certain point. That doesn't mean that you know, that great-great-great-great-grandmother didn't have a great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother. So, you know, it keeps on building. So what I wind up doing a lot of times is I'll find an ancestor way back and then start trying to chart back to the present day, find all their descendants. And some may think I'm a little bit of a stalker here, but what I'll do is I'll find an obituary for, you know, a great-great-grandfather's another, you know, a distant cousin, maybe a third cousin in California, find their obituary and find the names of people in there and then go look on Facebook and see if I can find some common names. And I'll send them a message and go, I don't know if you're interested in Ancestry. If you are, give me a call or drop me a note. Yeah. Otherwise, you know. You can ignore me. I'm not weird.
So in the last couple of minutes we have, Steve, you mentioned Facebook, and David, that leads me to a question I have for you. Sure. You know, we were talking about how online resources can help people in their search for their family histories. And then also we were discussing how context really, really matters. Context is the pursuit that we're going after. Like, what are these stories? So DNA gets us to biological relationships between people, possibly. But in the era of digital technology, what I wonder is going forward, those records that provide us that dash between date and birth, as you're talking about, that seems to be the thing more than anything that's at risk it's all so effervescent online.
Your digital photographs, the emails, the texts that people send, the poke, or just the chat you have on something like Facebook, where is it saved? What's printed out? If you don't print off your emails, if you don't print off your digital pictures, the 21st century is about to leave less of a record than the 17th century did. And even the 17th century, at least we have the paper trail for early New England families. Now what do we have for New England families? Only what you do by printing.
You don't have confidence in the cloud or the big databases that are backing up everything that we do online?
Can you show me a computer at BUR that actually can read a 5 1/4 floppy disk? If you stopped doing genealogy in the 70s or early 80s, that's what you backed it up on. You're basing it on technology that is kept up to date. So I always say have a hard copy. I love the people that tell me they still write journals and write diaries. Write. Preserve. Put names on photographs. Leave a time capsule for your descendants, not a question mark.
Interesting. So a time capsule, of course, is both stories, journals, and DNA all at once.
And NEHS collects out. And so if people are afraid they're going to lose their heritage, print it off or send the originals to us. We're the caretakers.
Well, David Lambert is chief genealogist at the New England Historic Genealogical Society. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Steve Brown, WBR reporter and amateur genealogist, thanks for taking us through your journey too, Steve.
Thank you, Magda.
And listeners, that original article that spawned this conversation about whether or not genealogy as we know it as a practice is coming to an end is at radioboston.org. Stick with us because we have got our Common Health segment coming up next. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.